Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Living Vertical Radio, where we change the narrative of media by introducing you to creative and innovative individuals that inspire you with their unique stories. Our host is C. Steen Duckworth, and you can call in or Skype into this program by calling 1-646-668-2928 #1. Please make sure your surrounding area is quiet because this is a live program. One Sure Sign Mobile Notary of Frisco, Texas provides professional notary service across the Dallas metro area. Our notary professionals are ready to help you with loan closings, power of attorney, fingerprinting, and other notary services. We meet you at your location of choice, your home, office, hospital, or local coffee shop, convenient to your schedule. Reliable, professional, and affordable. Once Your Sign is happy to support Living Vertical Radio here in Texas. Mention you heard this ad on Living Vertical for $5 off any notary service. Interested in advertising on our podcast with a listening audience of over 800,000? You can do a 15-second business ad, a 30-second radio ad, or a 10-minute interview radio ad. Our prices start out at $50. Contact us at info@verticalmediagroup.com. Our pricing is made to give everyone the ability to advertising no matter the budget. Thank you. And here's your host, C. Steen Duckworth.
Hi, everybody. Good evening. This is C. Steen Duckworth, and we are at Taste of Ink Live Radio, a product of Living Vertical Radio. And we have a great guest on today. I first want to say just one more announcement that, hey, we're syndicated now, and we are really excited. So you're going to see a few little tweaks and irks and all that that happen when you move over a big radio station and a magazine. But I want to just say thank you to all of our fans and all of our continued support through the years for helping us make this successful move. So today, our guest is author E.A. Smeraldo, and we are talking about her debut novel, which is a page-turning thriller, The Silent Count. The character, Dara, is determined to stop climate change before it's too late. A nuclear engineer whose life is a mess. She's paying off her dad's gambling debt. She's reeling from a broken engagement and practically invisible at the energy research agency where she works. She wishes someone would be paying attention to her, and guess what? The CIA is paying attention to her. So we'd like to welcome our author, E.A. Smeraldo, and talk to her about her debut novel, The Silent Count. Welcome, E.A. How are you?
Fine. Thank you so much for having me on your show, and also congratulations on your syndication.
Thank you. Thank you. We're really excited.
Great.
Long time coming. Really excited. More work, but still exciting, though. So you are living in you're a native of Washington, D.C., and currently you're in Maryland. I just want to say that bomb location. I miss living in D.C. I really do. I lived in Arlington, but I really miss the D.C. area. But I want to say that you're in the perfect place to be inspired by just everything that's going on in our country.
Yes, I do have a background working in the federal government. I no longer mm-hmm. work in the federal government, which is good if you want to write a political thriller.
yeah.
and of course, nothing in this is a true story, you know, of course. But, of course, you can be inspired by, you know, things you can fictionalize things. So there's been a lot of fictionalization in this novel. But, yes, the president somehow gets his hooks in here, and, yeah, the CIA is involved. And, you know, I think one of the running themes in this novel is you can't trust anybody. And one of those things you can't trust, unfortunately, is the government.
You know, it's very, this is a really timely novel. It's funny sometimes when you read a book or you see a book that an author puts out and you're like, oh my goodness, this is just such timely. I have to read this. And there were so many elements in this book that really were very interesting. But first, tell me, you know, you're a nuclear engineer. When did the creative streak hit you? Because you're also a writer and a musician.
Yes, I think the creativity was probably first because, you know, mm-hmm. as a child, I was one of these kids that, you know, I would put a rubber band between the knobs on my drawers and pretend to play the guitar in it. And so my parents figured, I think this child wants to, you know, play some musical instrument. So, and then I was obsessed with playing the guitar but, you know, I'd get my hands on every book about, you know, I love to read biographies. So I was always reading about, you know, Madame Curie and all these great, you know, strong women with scientific interests. And it just all sort of came together, I think. I think of science and, you know, art as sort of on the same continuum. But it is also a running question in the book, you know, what is you know, how do we get, how do we change the world? Is it through science? Is it through art? I think it's some combination.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I feel that science is some part of the creative, I would say the creative realm. When you talk about music and you talk about writing, especially, that all of those are such great arts, along with science. So how did you get inspired to be a nuclear engineer? Because I think that's actually very cool.
Oh, thank you. I was reading Omni Magazine, which was actually kind of a science fiction magazine, but that had occasional scientific articles. And one of the articles was called Hormesis with Ionizing Radiation, which is about mm-hmm. how radiation at certain levels can actually be helpful rather than harmful. And so I thought, mm-hmm. I know, I'm going to do my science project on this. So I think that just kind of created a monster. And after that, you know, I just decided I really liked it. I might have ventured into some other areas of engineering before, but then I thought, no, my heart is in this, especially when I realized that, you know, nuclear energy isn't the only part. There's also the weapons side of it, you know, the non-proliferation
right.
of weapons. And mm-hmm. that is actually mm-hmm. where I've made most of my living. But yes, it's mm-hmm. just been really amazing.
Mm-hmm. So as a kid growing up, what were your favorite books to read beside science fiction or Omni Magazine? Were you inspired by any other authors?
You know, that's one thing. My family didn't have much. You know, my dad was a barber. My mom was a seamstress. And they didn't mm-hmm. have much education because they came from Sicily. But one thing they spared no expense on was books. So we had all kinds, you know, Scholastic. We had all kinds of books. I'd sit there and read encyclopedias. I'd read everything. I loved biographies. As a child, mm-hmm. I love Dr. Seuss, you know. Seuss was just way off the rails. And as I got a little older, then the great classics, you know, Jane Austen and Charlotte de Bronte, the Bronte sisters, these all just really captured my imagination.
When did you know you wanted to write The Silent Count? What were some of the events or inspirations that led up to you actually writing this book?
You know, I did do some creative writing in college. I think, you know, as an engineering student, you don't have a lot of room in your schedule for those classes. But, you know, then I got, as I was a musician, so that was sort of my thing that I did when I was, you know, in high school, college, and then outside of out of college. So I played in local bands, and then, I mean, we actually, you know, I was on a local label. I licensed some music to a TV show. Things were really kind of going at a clip. But I was also working and then getting a master's degree at night and this whole business of, oh, I don't think I slept. But I think it all kind of just led me down this path of creativity. And as far as becoming a writer, I ended up getting this real dream job as in nuclear engineering. And once I finished the master's degree, and it took me all over the world. And when you're, you know, in Russia, or I was in Russia, Ukraine, a lot of these countries where we're in that are in a big problem. I couldn't keep the band up, so I still played, you know, on my own. But in any case, I thought, you know, I can take my notebook with me anywhere. So that's where I sort of got inspired to be a writer.
Wow. Okay. So why climate change? This is such a huge area, I think, in the last few years, although, you know, every so often we would hear inklings, and so now it's kind of like just really out there. And there's such a great divide in politics when it comes to climate change, but why did you decide to write this about, you know, somewhat on climate change? Were you, you know, was it something that you were inspired to do from your research or when you started to write the book, or did the book just take you that way?
Well, you know, I've always been, I mean, some people think you're a nuclear engineer, you can't possibly be an environmentalist, but nuclear power does not release greenhouse gases. So I've always thought, you know, you might see a bumper sticker saying another nuclear engineer for the environment, but that was always my thing. So, but anyway, I thought, you know, I thought climate change would be an interesting theme, but I started writing this book some time ago. You know, it's been an on and off thing for a long time, and I thought climate change is going to be solved by the time I'm done with this. You know, I thought this couldn't possibly be something we're still worried about, but sadly we are, and it's still an issue, and it still has naysayers. So I think I developed even more resolve as I going to write something that addressed climate change, but also addressed the political issues around it. You know, the naysayers and the people that just don't want to believe that it's real, and then the people that might do things that really aren't going to help.
Right. So how did you get your character Dara, though? How did she come to be, and why did you decide that it was going to be a woman?
I don't think I could write a character, a main lead character who was male. I just don't know that I could do that. And I so admire these writers that can just take this whole leap of imagination to be in someone else's skin that way. It definitely, and of course, she's a nuclear engineer, although she's much more accomplished than I think I'll ever be in the field. She has a PhD, and she's got this idea. In that respect, I think I write what I know. In other respects, she's very different because she's. I was inspired by just what so many young people go through nowadays. They're mired in debt, you know, student loans. I know the government is trying to do something about it, but for some kids, you know, it's a drop in the bucket what's happening. And I just feel for them because school is so expensive, but they have so many dreams, and it's so easy for a young person just to feel like it's never going to happen for me. And that's where my character identifies with a lot of what's going on in reality.
I think that's how we were, how we felt when I went to school. Now I'm helping my granddaughter and keeping her encouraged, the, you know, importance of her, you know, finishing, even though it looks like, you know, she may never achieve, you know, her dreams sometimes. I was like, well, you know, we go through that, you know, but it really is, you know, something worthwhile to do. And the way our family is kind of, you know, we're, none of us are really rich, but we all try to pull together to help that child that's, you know, in high school at least. So, along with other great things that we do for the family. But so, so tell me, because this is interesting about, you know, how nuclear weapons could indeed change weather patterns. And it was, I'm going to tell you why it was so interesting to see this is because, today when they pointed the satellite to the meteor and let it explode on the meteor to see if they could possibly someday use this method to move meteors out of the path of Earth or whatever, I thought it was really interesting. But how can nuclear weapons change weather patterns? Because it really is, you know, what I read in the book was really interesting and made me think about that. And I was like, you know, I can see that really happening. I really could. Tell us what you think.
Well, yes, the novel, as I said, I started writing it some time ago, and it was meant to be set in the distant future when things got really bad with the climate. But things got so bad in real life that I had to actually make the time only slightly in the future. Now, in the novel, it's meant to be satirical in a way, but it is real science based on something I read in my actual nuclear engineering textbook. But you can use nuclear weapons to do things like, and this was something proposed by Eisenhower, you know, to use it for things like building harbors and, you know, building artificial lakes. And in Russia, they actually, I think, did make artificial lakes in Kazakhstan, the Soviet era. But one thing that could be done is you could use it to eliminate certain mountain ranges to, you know, for example, reposition like El Nino or the jet stream. And as I said, this is not meant to be done in reality. It's meant to be sort of a thought experiment. But like you said, they're thinking outside of the box with what we can do with these big geoengineering types of projects, you know. But in the book, they use the weapons to what they propose, to find a place where they could eliminate a mountain range to create more favorable weather patterns. And that's what it said in my nuclear engineering textbook when I was in college. And I thought, someone's got to write a crazy science fiction novel about this. So no one did, so I thought, why not me?
Oh, that's true. That's true. So do you think it's too late for us when it comes to climate change, when you consider that, you know, we have these melting polar, you know, ice, these glaciers that are melting and breaking off? And do you think it's too late for us, or are we still able to maintain? I know the big thing now is getting everybody to go to electric cars and reducing some of our emissions. But, you know, I'm a little skeptic in that only because I say you talk about the expense of doing that, and will people be able to, will they want to do it because it's just very expensive? So do you think it's too late for us, or do we have a chance to do, to put a stop to some things?
I'm with you on the, just, you know, it's great to come up with a bar that we need to reach, you know, to set a bar. But, you know, where I live in a condominium, and there's no place to plug in an electric vehicle, even if I wanted to and had one. So, you know, the whole infrastructure would need to change. This should have started a long time ago, you know, like you need to transition over a period of years. It's sort of like, you know, if you look at old movies, you know, they talk about the seeing people on horseback, and then slowly everyone has a car and no one has horseback anymore, you know? So, but that the planning hasn't really been there. People have sort of been, you know, well, let's just let the market decide. And, you know, I'm for letting the market decide on certain things, but for something like this, you know, we need more, as I mentioned, political will. And that's unfortunately been the crux, you know, the sticking point. So, I don't think it's hopeless, though, because, you know, you talked about your relative who's young and bright and wanting to achieve and dreams. And I see that everywhere. I just see these wonderful young people. My nephew is at Virginia Tech, and he's studying so hard, and all the kids just like him are there, too. And they have big ideas. And you know, 20 years ago, we never talked about, you know, no one had an iPhone. No one had a, you know, the visionaries have come along that have made these technologies that have changed the world. And I'd like to think that somebody will come along that will, or is working on it right now, that with the technology that will change everything and set it right.
Mm-hmm.
That's my dream, at least.
Well, I tell you, I have met some interesting people along the way as a radio interviewer that are, just have some great ideas, and I'm so, you know, I'm so inspired to see them actually bring some of their ideas to fruit. But tell me, how do you think politics corrupts and skews, you know, humans on perspectives of what is right and wrong? Because we see a lot of that when it comes to talking about climate change, and when we, and especially where you're at in Washington, D.C., you know, we see, you know, it's when I see some of these politicians saying, oh, yeah, we want to, you know, we want to open up these coal mines again and put people back to work. And I'm like, you can't. We're so far past that. And, you know, and it's like, you know, where do you say, you know, hey, this is just not right. You know, you're making it look like it's the right thing to do, but it's really wrong. So, I mean, how do you feel about that? You know, because, I mean, your book has so many twists and turns about this,
right,
about Dara's idea. Yeah.
Yes, and the politicians in the novel, you know, they're all over the place. But the president, the reason why he decides to finally do something about climate change is because his poll numbers are down. And, you know, so many times,
mm-hmm.
You know, the politician, they're flip-flopping everywhere because they follow the poll numbers, and, you know, they just say whatever they think is going to get them into office. We see that all the time, and I know that this isn't going to be anything new, you know, earth-shattering. But it's just, it makes me very cynical, and I try not to be. So there's that aspect. But then there might be a rogue element, or there might be somebody who wants to advance themselves, and they might take somebody's idea and use it in a way that maybe they shouldn't have, or turns it into something that person never wanted. I'm not going to do too many spoilers here.
Oh, no, I don't want
things
to be right.
Go off
I
the rails.
Right.
Things
right.
go off the rails in the silent count in a really big way. And our poor Dara may have, she's young and she's smart, but, you know, naivete, if you just don't have a lot of life experience, you might trust the wrong person. So in the government, you
That's
have a lot
true.
Of people that only care about their careers and getting ahead. And so she runs into that.
So what do you hope the readers will get out of your book? How do you feel, or how will they feel or be different after reading it?
I think that, first of all, I hope that they'll be entertained, because nobody wants to read a ponderous book that, you know, doesn't have any, as you said, twists and turns. So it is a page turner. It is a barn burner. That is what I'm hearing. So it's very exciting that people have been staying up way past their bedtime with my novel. But beyond that, you know, It does make, people have said, it does make them think. They're thinking about more about climate change. I mean, we can all try to do our part. But, you know, also about holding our elected leaders, holding their feet to the fire and taking it seriously. So, you know, they can learn more. Maybe, you know, as as you know, I am a nuclear engineer, and so is the character
right.
in the book. And, so they might want to think about that, and maybe they're not going to come away thinking that's not for me, or I don't think we should go in that direction. But maybe they
right.
might reconsider. So you know, it's
right,
just
exactly.
to open their mind a little bit about what might be out there, and maybe just at the same time, maybe sympathetic to what a lot of young people go through. I know some people have been a little harsh on our these kids that are coming up now, and every generation
mm-hmm.
does that, you know, all these kids today,
right.
get off my lawn. But I think we need to have a lot of sympathy for them, because these are difficult times.
This is a great read and a great conversation starter, I think, especially when you talk about that genre that talks about speculative fiction. I think this is a great book to just have a conversation about. It's interesting, and when you're talking about young people, it's interesting just what comes up when they're reading a certain book. I mean, my granddaughter is 13, and we were talking one day, and I said, oh, I gotta, you know, I'm gonna do another radio program. And she said, well, can we talk about the pandemic? And I looked at her, I was like, okay. And I said to her, I said, what do you want to talk about? She says, I want to talk about how it has affected us in junior high. And I'm like, you know, she makes a good point. I said, I hadn't really thought about that, but this book also is a great conversation piece. And I'm very, we have for the people that are in the audience, we have two copies, and I'm would really love to give these two copies away for you. And you know what to do. You know how to dial in. And the first two people that dial in and have heard the show tonight will get a free copy of The Silent Count, a thriller by E.A. Smiroda. And I hope you will enjoy it. I did. So, EA, I want to say, what is your next project that you're working on, or have you thought about what you want to work on next?
There are a few things. I was asked to help curate an anthology of stories that is called No More Fairy Tales, and it is a collection
mm-hmm.
of climate fiction stories, and it will be distributed to all of the delegates to the upcoming United Nations Conference on Climate Change that's happening in November, and
wow.
in Egypt. And after that is over, they will release them to the public. So if you want to look for No More Fairy Tales sometime in November, I helped pick some of the stories for that. So that was exciting.
Oh,
and
God,
I am writing a sequel. Sequel to the climate, to the silent.
I was wondering if you were going
to
write a sequel. I was wondering if you were going to do a sequel. Okay.
Yeah, it's a standalone book, but
mm-hmm.
I have thought of some, you know, I think Dara is going to come back to continue saving the planet, so be ready. You know, there is a soundtrack, so you know, I was a musician, and there's song lyrics in the novel. There's a character named Jericho Wells, who is her ex that she's trying, this novel, she's trying
uh-huh.
to stay friends with her ex. And
yeah.
there's all this, there is romance in there, so be ready for that too. But anyway, there's some music, so they can find it on my YouTube channel. So EA Smiraldo
okay.
is my YouTube channel.
Yeah,
well,
I will
and
definitely be putting all of. Yeah, I'll be putting all of EA's information in the magazine. You'll be able to see her website and her Facebook page. And we'll be able to get some information. I will, especially, I think that sounds really interesting, and I would really like to read that as well. So definitely for all our audience, you know, this has been A Taste of Ink Live, and the author guest has been E.A. Smiroda. Her book is called The Silent Count. And definitely we're going to have this up on our radio, on our YouTube channel. This interview will be here and on Vertical Life magazine. And if you'd like to get a copy of her book, you can get a copy of her book now at Amazon. And that's The Silent Count, a thriller by E.A. Smiroda. Well, E.A., it's been great talking to you and interesting. I'm going to finish reading this book, and I'm looking forward. I was going to ask you when I got almost to the end. I said, I wonder if she's going to do a sequel. We'll be looking for that sequel.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's been great talking to you.
It's been great talking to you, too. And as I said, we will be in touch with you. I hope we get an opportunity to interview you on the sequel and on the anthology. That would be great.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely come back. Come back for sure. That would be a great conversation.
Great.
Well, thank you so much, EA, and you have a great evening. Thank you for being with us tonight and talking about your book, The Silent Count, and we'll be looking forward to see more of your endeavors coming in the future.
Thank you, too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you to our faithful listeners. This has been Living Vertical Radio, and you have been listening to our host, C. Steen Duckworth. Stay tuned to our next program. Interested in getting your business in front of a worldwide audience? Contact info@verticalmediagroup.com. That's info@verticalmediagroup.com for details. And now, a word from our sponsors.
Books that make you laugh. Books that make you scream. Books that make you hope. And books that make you dream. What's on your bookshelf? Discover the books that make you who you are on BooksThatMakeYou.com. Read book reviews. Meet the authors who pour their souls into the books you love. And enter to win bookish prizes. If you're a bibliophile, then Books That Make You is your new best friend. Visit BooksThatMakeYou.com or find us on Insta and Facebook.